And our special guest, Claire Johnson, we're talking about her work, Mindful Dreaming, Lucid Dreaming, but we're talking about all kinds of dreams tonight. And we'll get to your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Claire Johnson with us. Claire, what kind of a story could you give us that really, really even got you that had to be tied into lucid dreaming?
Well, you mean like how lucid dreaming has helped me to resolve things in my life?
Well, no, just a story itself based on your research.
A story based on my research. Yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of people share their stories with me in my workshops. And I can share one about a guy who had a creative block. He couldn't do anything for 6 months. He was an artist. And he came to one of my workshops, and he told us about this terrible nightmare he kept having. It was a recurring nightmare. And in the nightmare, he saw he was standing on top of a cliff, completely powerless to do anything other than watch. And he was right by the ocean, and there were these beautiful ships, and they were coming in, being borne in by a storm, and they were going to smash on the rocks below him, and there was nothing he could do to change this. And this nightmare kept coming back. Every time he woke up, he felt just awful after the nightmare, completely depressed and like he had no power over his life. And so we did a dream work technique that I developed at university called lucid writing. And it's when you re-enter the dream and you bring your waking lucidity to that dream, and you allow the dream to change and transform spontaneously as you write without stopping to think, to keep the connection between your conscious and unconscious minds. So he did this. It only takes about 5 minutes. And at the end, he was completely stunned, and he looked up and he said, "Oh, I want to share what happened in this lucid writing exercise." And he said that, to his amazement, when he'd re-entered the dream, he was standing on the cliff as before, but these ships, instead of being brought in by the wind and dashed and smashed to pieces on the rocks, they rose into the air and they flew above his head for safety. And he said that for him was incredibly powerful, because he suddenly realized that he can change bad things in his life.
I think we dropped you again.
And so after that, his creative block vanished, and he was able to create again. I saw him 6 months after that, and he was freed up creatively, because he'd managed to change something on the level of these deep unconscious images. So when I hear from people who have these kind of experiences, it just brings it home to me. It reinforces all the time that when we change our unconscious dream movie, then that can effectuate real change in our actual waking lives.
Claire, we've had you drop off just for a couple seconds a couple times tonight. Are you having phone issues out there, or do you know?
No, I don't think so. Do you want to try me on my mobile?
No, you're okay so far. You sound okay. I'm just wondering if you have, like, call waiting and somebody's calling you or something.
No. Okay. Maybe it's the distance. I don't know.
Okay. Let's go to some phone calls for you. International line, we've got Kathy in Winnipeg, Canada. Hi, Kath. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Kathy. Or hi, George. I listen to the show. I've been wanting to call for a long time.
Well, you've got Claire now, Kath. Go ahead.
Claire, I'd like to ask a couple questions. One is quite simple. One, do you dream in black and white or color?
In color. I dream all the time in color. I don't think I've had a black and white dream. How about you?
Well, you know what? I'll go into that in a minute. But I did have one dream in color. I know I did. When I was a lot younger.
Yeah.
But I took sick, and I was stressed out on my job, and then I quit dreaming.
Okay.
And I ended up studying psychology, and I got well again. I was overworked in my job. I burnt out. And but anyway, things are escalating with my employer, and one night I had a really bad dream about the head of the department.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at a loss of how to handle this. Like, I'm retired from the department now, but I'm still getting hassled.
Still, huh?
Yeah.
And in your dream state, it happens too.
No, just once in my dream state. But it's getting to the point where I can't handle it anymore.
What does she do, Claire?
Well, I think it's obviously showing that this is still a major issue that's happening in your life. And maybe the best thing that you can do is take the dream where you dreamed about that situation and re-enter it in your mind's eye, and then see what you can change in the dream state. Talk to the people in your dream, recall all the imagery, and ask them, you know, what can I do to change this? You can actually ask the dream and it will give you an answer. You could also incubate a dream to help you with this situation, to help you to find a solution. Dreams are excellent at finding solutions to all sorts of waking dilemmas and problems. So to incubate a dream, you could write down your question on a piece of paper, put it under your pillow, and really have the firm intention to have a dream that will give you the solution to this and that you will remember it. Because I think, obviously, this is a situation that's very upsetting for you, and it's not healthy to continue with it. So you need to find ways of moving past it and freeing yourself from all of this these negative influences in your life.
How accurate are dreams in order to help us? Are they pretty good?
Dreams can be absolutely spot on, but because they come in with such symbolic language, it can sometimes be really hard to work out what it is they're actually saying to us. They can be very cryptic. So that's why it's important to work with the dream, to unwrap it, look at the emotions within that dream, and see what the dream seems to be suggesting to you. But it's always very good to put some sort of action in your waking life to honor the dream, even if it's just writing the dream down, or if you were wearing a red top in the dream, wear a red top that day, just to connect you with your dream. And that will help you to actually find out what the dream is really saying to you and show the dream that you're listening to it.
Why is a dream always as if we are on the outside looking in? It's almost like real life. Where, I mean, you can sometimes see your hands and legs, but you don't see your face. You don't see yourself in the dream. Why is that?
Yeah, I think it's because that's our waking life perspective being replicated in the dream. So in waking life, we have this perspective as well. We're looking out from our own faces, aren't we? And so that will get replicated in the dream. Although there are also dreams where you find yourself as a kind of bodiless observer, and that's...
Well, let's see. We dropped her out again, but let's see if she pops back. There she is.
Completely wrapped up and engaged in the action.
All right, next up, let's go to Joe in the Bronx. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Hey, George, how are you?
Okay.
Good. I wanted to ask Claire, I have this recurring dream, I've had it a few times, where I'm on a city bus and I'm trying to get home. I'm not sure if it's the right bus, and it's taking forever for me to reach my destination. And along the way, I'm kind of confused by my surroundings. How would you interpret this dream?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, what I would say is that if this were my dream, then it's about finding home, finding where I feel completely at ease in my life, and it's taking me forever to get home, and I feel confused on my journey, and I'm not sure it's the right bus, I'm not sure I'm on the right path, or I'm not sure I've got the right vehicle to get me there, but it's your dream, so it's a good idea if you kind of return to this dream. Since it's a recurring dream, it's obviously got an important message for you, so why not try mentally, imaginatively re-entering that dream and seeing what happens. For example, you could ask a bus driver, you know.
All right. Well, she's gone again. And, Tom, I'm going to have you call her back. All right? So let's disconnect her, and you can call her back and see if we can get a better line. Meanwhile, let's go to Diana in New York. Welcome to the program. Hi, Diane. Go ahead.
Hi there, Miss Damari. How are you?
I am fine. We're going to try to get Claire back for you. She's way out in Germany, and... obviously,
yeah,
their phone system's not like ours, huh?
Yeah, and the weather, you know, we've had those thunderstorms are all over the place.
They are. They really are. So tell me about your question. What were you going to ask
her? Deja vu, dear. Deja vu. Like, I'll have a dream, and a couple weeks later, it happens, or it seems like it happens. And or else I know somebody I've never met before, and then they're there. It's weird. I don't know. It's like, you know, I have a dream. Then 2 or 3 days later, it could be I'm walking in the same dream doing the same thing.
So your dreams are like deja vu. It's not like you're doing it in your waking state.
Oh, no, I'm doing it in my wake after my dream. I wake up and then I go.
No, but you recall the dream. Happens. You know, we're common deja vu. You're awake and you know, I know what's going to happen next. I've been in this environment.
Yep.
You dream it first.
I dream it first, yes. And then it happens.
How long does it take before it happens?
It could be a week. It could be a month. It could be 2 days.
Interesting. Claire, we got you back on. She's having episodes of dream deja vu cases where she dreams something and then it happens in real life. What is that?
Yeah, well, this happens pretty often to anyone who's very connected with it.
Oh, she's gone again, folks. Tom, I'm going to ask you to put her on a different line just to see if that works. Would you please? So let's get her off that and put her on a wild card line, and we'll try that. If that doesn't work, then she's got some phone issues. Wow. Well, Diana, let's go back to you. I can't seem to get her to get you an answer.
Yeah. When are you coming back to it? When are you going to come up towards New York, you know, up towards Canada one of these days and have something here? You know, some kind of a.
We might have another live show in Toronto. You can make that, can't you?
Yeah, yes, I can. I'm right over the border. I'm right out. As a matter of fact, I see Canada every day.
Well,
I don't know where that wall's going to go. It's not going to go down the center of the river, I'll tell you that.
All right, so we got her back again. Let's give her a try here. Go ahead. Claire, you with us?
I'm with you.
Yeah, you're bopping off like crazy. I've never heard it like that. But she's having deja vu dreams, and then she has these dreams become real later on. So what causes that?
Yeah, it's I think it's very common in anyone who's deeply connected with their dreams. And I get this myself a lot, not for important things, but just things like I receive a letter in a green envelope and in my dream, and then the next morning I go and check my mailbox and there's a green envelope waiting for me, you know, things like that. And I think, as we kind of discussed earlier, I think that dreams don't really adhere to linear time. So dreams will jump into the future or back into the distant past. And this is I think it's very interesting to see what this when this happens, and it's a good idea to write the dreams down and then see which ones come true in waking life.
Let's go to Barry in South Carolina. Welcome to the show. Hi, Bear.
Hello there, George. What's going on out there in L.A., pal?
Well, I'm in St. Louis right now.
Oh, okay. In that case, you're a little bit closer to Asheville than you would be.
That's exactly how it works.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you and Tommy get to fly directly into Asheville, or are you going to have to take a limo from Charlotte?
I am going to fly, first of all, from St. Louis to Chicago, Chicago to Asheville, and then I guess we're going to get a drive into Asheville.
Absolutely. No problem at all. What I was going to suggest is, if you and Tommy have a little bit of time, George, you have got to see the Biltmore Mansion.
I heard about that.
Listen, I'm telling you, it's right there in Asheville, George, not 5 miles from the Diana Wortham Theater. Have you guys got a hotel room for either Friday night or Saturday night?
Do you expect me to tell you that on the air?
All right, kick me back to Tommy when I get off the air.
I will do that. But go ahead. Claire's waiting for you.
I sure will. As a matter of fact, George, such a shame about our friend Art Bell, of course. And I went through some of the same things, George. I've been addicted to the oxycodones.
All right, Barry, go with your question with Claire, would you?
Here's my lucid dream while I was doing my alcohol and stuff. Anyway, the dream would start off kind of I was in a REM type sleep. I knew that I was having the dream, and I knew I was having what was going to end up being a real crying jag. I would cry like crazy in the dream, George. And but then all of a sudden things started lightening up, and all of a sudden I was surrounded by all my friends and relatives, and we were just laughing. And the thing is, I got to laughing so hard in my dream, George, that I intentionally woke myself up slowly, my consciousness, laughing just as hard. My wife, she said, "You were just laughing so hard."
Oh, that's lovely. I think there's nothing nicer than waking up laughing from a dream. That's just beautiful.
It's better than crying, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, the interesting thing for me with that dream is the emotional extremes. Like, first of all, there's the crying and so upset, and then the dream just lightens, spontaneously lightens, and you've got friends and relatives, and then you will start laughing. So it's really actually a very beautiful dream, because it's kind of showing, well, for me, it's like, if it were my dream, it would be like, okay, life can be hard, and there are tough things, and I can cry about them, but I have my friends. And I have my relatives, and I can experience deep happiness in my life.
It's a wonder with these dreams how they can change your personality, change your lifestyle, change your health. It's very, very powerful, the mechanism we have. Was it God-given, or what's the reason we got this ability?
Well, we're dreaming in the womb before we're even born. You know, babies spend most of their time in REM sleep, dreaming away. And it's an absolutely natural part of human consciousness. So we often think about the waking state as being like the main state of consciousness, and nothing else really matters. It's the awake state. But I don't believe that at all. I think that all the other states of consciousness are equally valid, equally important, and dreams are, you know, there's so much to be explored there. There's so much we can learn about ourselves and our lives and about other people when we explore our dreams. And they are part of our life experience. And as I said earlier, we spend 6 years of our lives asleep and dreaming, 6 whole years just in dream state. So it's something we need to pay attention to, I think, or else we're missing out on those 6 years. They'll just be like lost time in our lives.
Is there anything about dreams that we should be concerned about?
Well, I think that when people have terrible nightmares, there is a danger if they can't get past them, if they're stuck psychologically and keep getting repetitive, horrendous nightmares, there's a danger that they won't be able to deal with these dreams themselves. And that's why it's very important, if you are having terrible nightmares, recurring nightmares, if you're scared to go to sleep, you do need to find a therapist to help you through this. Don't try and do all of it by yourself. Some dreams should not be faced alone.
All right, we're going to come back and take some final phone calls with Dr. Claire Johnson as we talk about mindful dreaming. And her website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, Dr. Claire Johnson with us. Our final segment, we'll get to your calls. Claire, you talk about lucid states of consciousness, that there are other lucid states of consciousness. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so what I mean by that is that it's when we just talk about lucid dreaming, then we miss out on all the other possible lucid states where we can explore dreams. So I've already talked about different ways of playing with a dream to unwrap it while we're awake. That's a way of bringing lucidity to the dream and helping us to understand it more. So that's one lucid state. Also, there is lucid hypnagogia. So that's when we stay aware while we're falling asleep, which sounds completely paradoxical and impossible, but it is actually a possibility. These are called wake-induced lucid dreams. And it's about remaining aware as we just drift down into sleep, and we go through all the strange imagery and sensations that come up in the hypnagogic or pre-sleep state. And when we become alert to those, that's also a very creative state of consciousness. It can help us to have new ideas and to feel refreshed and vital. And then there are also lucid light states where you're conscious and you're floating in mm-hmm. light or moving through light in your dreams. So there are many other ways of bringing lucidity or mindfulness into all aspects of our lives.
Claire, based on your research, would you say that lucid dreams are there to help us primarily?
Yeah, I would say they are, and they're a natural state of consciousness. They occur naturally in everybody. I think it's amazing because just sometimes it's enough to become lucid in a nightmare for the dream imagery to spontaneously transform into something else. I remember reading a story about a Vietnam veteran. He was working with a therapist because he was suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is often linked to horrendous recurring nightmares. And this veteran had recurring nightmares about being on the battlefield and watching his friend die. And those dreams kept coming back. And his therapist, Timothy Green, suggested to him that he try to become lucid in that recurring nightmare. And the guy managed to do this. He became lucid in this dream. And in the dream, his buddy didn't die. He was holding him in his arms, and then he told him, hey, the war is over. And the two of them got up together and walked off the battlefield. And that was obviously a huge breakthrough for this Vietnam veteran, because even if we can't change what actually happened in the past, we can change it. We can change things on the level of our unconscious mind and the things that we're holding on to, the emotions that we're having difficulty getting past. And he, years after that, he still had never had that nightmare again. It had gone after that, that situation of just becoming lucid in his dream. So sometimes lucidity can be incredibly healing without us even sort of particularly planning anything. It can just happen that we become lucid, and then we have a spontaneous healing transformation.
Let's go to Michael in Modesto, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Good morning, George and Claire.
Hi.
My question was regarding lucid dreams, and my first question was, is it possible for two people to meet up in a dream, like intentionally, or would that be like just one person thinking that in the dream, or could it be two people coming together?
Right. Well, there have been lots of people have actually tried to do this, to say to each other, okay, I'll see you in a dream tonight. And it's such a difficult thing. I mean, often what happens, I mean, I've tried this myself years ago. Often what happens is one person has that dream and really feels in the dream that they're connected with the other person, but the other person has no memory of it when, you know, the next day when they talk about it. So it's a bit difficult to actually make it happen, although there have been some stories of people who have had the same dream and they've been in the same dream together. But I would say that's it's really quite a hard thing to kind of study scientifically and get proof on, you know. So mm-hmm. It's a bit of a difficult one, but there's nothing to stop people trying it. And there are ways of connecting with other people in our dreams, perhaps not physically having the same exact same dream as them or being in dream time like that. But sometimes people can pass information to each other through their dreams.
I think dreams, Claire, are so powerful if you know how to manage them and use them. You can do incredible things with them, can't you?
Yeah, you seriously can. With the International Association for the Study of Dreams, they have a dream telepathy contest, just a fun contest that they run once a year. And when I went to my first IASD dream conference, I was pretty skeptical about dream telepathy. I thought, no, you know, there's no way that people can guess kind of in their dreams what's happening in this image and then and work out what it is. But I went along and I met all these people who said, oh, yeah, we do the dream telepathy contest. And there's four images. The telepathic sender chooses one image and then spends the night transmitting it. And then people try to dream about that image, write down their dreams and see if they've got it right the next day. So I decided to enter the contest, and I had a lucid dream where I met the telepathic sender in the dream, and I thought I'd better not ask her outright what the image is, because that would be cheating. So I said, oh, you must be tired trying to transmit the image, you know. And she said, oh, I've just been shouting the word in my head, like the word that represents the image. And I said, that's funny, because in my last dream, I heard a woman shouting the word tree. And she said, oh, yes. And we started talking about the nature of green and talking about trees. And then in my lucid dream, I was standing in front of a huge, beautiful green tree. And I started to draw this tree because I thought, oh, yeah, you know, I should maybe jot this down. Then I realized, well, there's no point in jotting this down and drawing a picture because I'm dreaming. So why don't I just wake myself up and write down my dream? And that's what I did. And as it turned out, the next day, that was the target image. It was this huge, beautiful tree. And I'd identified the way that the sender had tried to send the image as well by shouting about it in her dreams. So it was quite incredible for me because it really opened my eyes to the power of dreaming and what's possible. That was back in 2004 at my first dream conference.
Well, it is powerful indeed. Next up, let us go to Tracy in Ashland, Oregon. Hi, Trace.
Hi, how are you, George?
Great, thank you.
Call.
Glad you got in.
Yeah, I was just going to ask Claire real quickly. I have done some reading on Tibetan dream yoga and kind of the similarities. I think the wake-induced lucid dreaming kind of, I think, comes from the Tibetan dream yoga and, you know, being able to kind of look at your daily life more as a dream. And then when you're able to do that, how it kind of helps the transition into being able to become lucid within your dreams. And I just wanted her to maybe, if she could maybe touch on that a little bit. And then just one short thing about lucid dreams being so cathartic. When my mother passed away several years ago, I had a lucid dream where I was able to actually talk with her and, you know, say things to her that I hadn't been able to say before she had passed away. And I can't even begin to describe how much that helped me. And I really do think that there is something to lucid dreaming as far as our spiritual path in life, whatever that is, aside from religion. And like I said, the Tibetan dream yoga, I think, they've got a lot to teach us there. And I just wondered if maybe she could talk a little bit just about that. And I will take that answer offline. And thanks so much.
Okay. Go ahead, Claire.
Thank you, Tracy. Two really great questions or topics that you've brought up there. Yeah, so in Tibetan dream yoga, lucid dreaming is seen as one of the paths to enlightenment. And we're encouraged to develop a lucid mindset where we become mindful about every aspect of our lives through every level of consciousness. So one of the goals of Tibetan dream yoga is to remain conscious throughout an entire night of sleep. So I talked earlier about how when we're falling asleep, we can remain lucid as we actually fall asleep, which is fascinating. You can watch a dream build itself up before your eyes and become three-dimensional, and you can just step into it. It's quite fascinating. And of course, there are lucid dreams. You can become lucid in the dream state. And there are other states of consciousness during a night of sleep where there's no dream imagery and we're in what many people call the void. The void, it's like an emptiness or this huge black space. And in that space, you are also lucid, and you can float. You don't have a body. You could experience yourself as a pinprick of conscious awareness. And so it is possible to remain conscious and lucidly aware throughout an entire night of sleep. And that is excellent practice for becoming more lucid in every aspect of our lives. So developing this lucid mindset. And as for your question about bereavement dreams, when we've lost someone we love. I mean, I get people coming up to me and saying, you know, my husband died 6 months ago and I haven't dreamed of him yet. How do I dream of him? I just want to hold him in my arms again. And it can be incredibly cathartic, as you say, to have these wonderful dreams. There are different types of bereavement dreams. So the one that you experienced, Tracy, with your mother sounds like it was a very positive one. And often we experience the deceased loved one in glowing health, and they seem vital and alert and happy to see us, and we can hug them, and it just feels incredibly wonderful, a real emotional connection. But there are also negative grief dreams, because grief is not always simple. You know, sometimes grief is all bound up with anger, bitterness, betrayal, many other things. Sometimes we feel angry at the dead person for dying, even though it wasn't their fault, because we feel like we've been abandoned. So all sorts of emotions come up, and these will come out in our dreams. Maybe there'll be a dream of us seeing a deceased loved one, and then they argue with us, or they run away from us and refuse to speak to us, or they're crying, they seem unhappy. Now, these dreams show that we have work to do on a psychological level to release ourselves from these very strong emotions and be compassionate towards ourselves during the grief process. And we can use nightmare solutions on these dreams, engage with them, re-enter them, and find out more about them to help us to get through the grief process.
What I also find fascinating about the dream state, Claire, if you mentioned the cancer episode, is that for some reason the dreams seems to be able to talk to your body or your brain and tell you about the illnesses. Truly remarkable. It's almost as if the two of them, the body and the dream, works, you know, side by side.
Oh, they're completely interlinked, George. There's actually been excellent doctoral research into this from the University of Heidelberg in Germany. That's Dr. Melanie Schädlich. And she did her research on how lucid dreaming, when we practice sports skills in lucid dreams, we can actually improve our waking performance. So she studied people who did things like dart throwing, kickboxing, and swimming. And one swimmer was told by his teacher he'd never be good at swimming. And so he practiced his swim strokes in his lucid dreams. He would get lucid, he would create a swimming pool, and he would do these swim strokes nice and slowly. He would sometimes fill the swimming pool with yogurt so that it created more muscle resistance, or he'd fill it up with a load of candies just for fun. And his swimming improved incredibly. He ended up getting the highest possible mark because there is this connection between the dreaming mind and the physical body. And experiments have also been done in Switzerland that have found out that if a lucid dreamer clenches their fist in a lucid dream, well, it shows up on the electromyogram, which is the electrodes that show the muscle tension. The same muscles will twitch. There'll be movement there. So what we do in dreams has a physical impact on our physical body, on our actual body. And also we strengthen the neural connections in the brain by practicing particular movements or particular sports. So it's all interlinked, of course. You know, we're not just a body and then there's a big thick line and then we're also a dreaming brain. I mean, it's not like that. We're totally interconnected systems.
All right, let's go next to Daniel in Sacramento. Okay, Dan, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Great, thanks.
Oh, it's a long time since I've been able to get through, and that's kind of a bad thing in a good way because that means you're getting more and more popular. And I just wanted to, I told Tommy, I'm going to wish you a future happy birthday because every time you had your birthday, I couldn't get through.
Oh, thanks.
So I never knew when I'll be able to get through again, so I'm making the most of it. And, it's interesting. When you were talking about people being whacked out, man, it seems like now I'm starting to notice that myself here around Sacramento. I just try to stay away from them. If I start to know someone that might be a little off the hinge or whatever.
Yep, I get it.
But anyway, going back to the dream, you know, before 9/11, I got the feeling that it was just too quiet. You know what I mean? Like nothing was going on. And then I had a dream. It made sense after 9/11, of course. But at the time, I had a dream that I was on this airplane. Okay. There's a bunch of people that was screaming and hollering. I didn't know who they were. And then suddenly I just seen this, like, from the front of the plane, a big old, like, fireball come shooting toward me, you know, on the plane. The first thing you know, it was so realistic, George, that I just woke up screaming. I never had a dream like that in my life, ever, until, I don't know if that was just, I'm a Christian. I don't know if that's the Lord letting me know that something was going to happen. And it's like the next day I had to go to work, and I didn't even listen to the radio, and I had to go to work from 3 to 11. And my father, when he picked me up, he said, "Did you hear the news?" I said, "No, what?" He said, "Two planes just collided into the towers." I said,